On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I get into even more Nets what-ifs. We talk about Brook Lopez, Kobe Bryant, and a tip shot that could have changed everything. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Here with me, as always, is my man, Marcus Barahal, the guy, one of the many people keep me sane during this quarantine. Marcus, how are you?
I'm good, Josh. Still sane, still hanging in there. Been over 2 months at this point, so definitely starting to feel like reality, and I feel like once things are like back to where they were, I feel like it'll feel weird that things are like oh, I can like interact with people. That'll feel weird eventually.
Yeah. What are you missing the most besides like the normal stuff of like, you know, interacting with people, going to a restaurant, you know, that type of thing, getting outside without like fear of contracting or accidentally giving someone the disease? What's under the radar thing?
I definitely miss like riding the subway, just like from being from the city, and like it's just such a feeling that I've like had since childhood, and it's like very comforting. And so I'm nervous that when we are eventually like able to go back on like whenever we want, that I'm gonna get like nauseous or something on the train. I wouldn't want that. So hoping that my subway experiences are okay after this.
Yeah, no, that's under the radar. I like riding the subway also. I didn't would not have thought of that. It's probably not in my top 50, but you know, teach their own.
Very filthy, even pre-COVID. So yeah. tough to yeah. Go on there now.
Exactly. Well, cool. We are going to get into the second half of the Nets what ifs that we started last week. Have some interesting things that we'll discuss and bandy about. And then also get into some news. There's, you know, we've been doing kind of an all-time tournament, if you will, with Marcus, myself, one of the Locked On Knicks co-hosts, and then a few of our ragtag group of friends drafting all-time teams. And we've had the matchups kind of play out. People voting on Twitter. We have me getting into a little Twitter skirmish with Chris McCullough, former man. And then we have some news about Kyrie Irving with a just kind of sticking to his brand with a mysterious Instagram story that he posted. And then Spencer Dinwiddie trying to potentially raise money to let the fans pick his next destination. Should Nets fans be worried? Seems like no based on the traction he has. But another interesting idea from what I call the most fascinating man in the NBA. But Marcus, first, we will get started with the Nets what ifs. Kick us off on this.
Sure. So we did a couple of them last week. We've got a few more to get to. Let's start with the 2008 NBA draft. The Brooklyn Nets used the 10th pick in that draft to select Brook Lopez, the center out of Stanford. But I was going back. I looked at some old mock drafts. Our current colleague, Chad Ford, had Brook going to Seattle in one of his early mocks on Bleacher Report. They also had Brook going to Seattle, which was the fourth pick. So definitely a steep fall for Brook to wind up with the Nets. Josh, last time we talked mostly about things that like went poorly that could have gone better. This time it's something that went well that the Nets kind of lucked into.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I remember this draft, you know, Brook Lopez came up off a really strong sophomore campaign at Stanford. He was like kind of just considered, but pretty much the one of the kind of preeminent players in the Pac-10 at that point with OJ Mayo and Kevin Love. And really no one thought he was going to drop to 10. You know, maybe it was kind of 4-7 range. Like him getting past Charlotte at that point, which had the 9th pick, was pretty inconceivable. You know, they had a team where they had just taken Ray Felton a couple of years earlier. So he's, you know, think about him as the point guard of the future. You have Emeka Okafor there who, you know, has had an okay few years, but certainly not living up to expectations in the number one pick. And, you know, there seemed to be, I don't think they were wed to him in any stretch of the imagination. And for them to, you know, go ahead and pass on Brook Lopez for DJ Augustine was really surprising. So it basically falls into the Nets' lap in getting Brolo, and, you know, the rest was history. He had a really successful career with the Nets, only one All-Star appearance, but a career that was really good despite being kind of marred by injuries, you know, putting up really solid, kind of consistent 18-7, 18-8 numbers. Obviously, the rebounding was kind of a bit hit or miss there. But ultimately, you have a guy who, one of the most successful players in franchise history, puts up about 50 win shares in a Nets uniform. Obviously, wasn't on a ton of winning teams, including being the unfortunate kind of, I guess, record bearer of the best player on the 12-70 team. But, you know, I can't imagine him not being on this team for the last kind of decade plus. But it's interesting. Maybe it would have helped them if Charlotte had taken him and, you know, Nets are ending up with like Jared Bayless or Augustine or Brandon Rush, because, you know, maybe from there, obviously, they might have really had a chance of just like tanking, bottoming out fully and having better picks in subsequent years. You know, so the following year, they had the 11th pick, take Terrence Williams. But there were guys like DeMar DeRozan, Steph, James Harden, Blake was the number one pick that year. So a ton of superstars, and Terrence Williams is not one of them. And then, so, and, you know, maybe it's the type of thing where you get a really good player, but he doesn't really impact winning as much as you'd like. But he makes you good enough to the sense where you can't really get those top picks. Obviously, they did have the best lottery odds in 2010, even though the ping pong balls didn't fall their way. But was this like, it actually is crazy that the Nets might have been better off in terms of franchise success by not getting Brook Lopez almost.
Yeah, there were a few different scenarios, like when I looked back, that could have gone differently but still played out well for the Nets. Like in that same Chad Ford thing that I mentioned, he discussed that the Nets had considered like trading up to 5 with the Grizzlies, and that if they had done that, they would have taken Kevin Love at that pick, and that trade would have been for the 10th pick and for a future first. So Love, obviously one of the three best players from this draft, along with Westbrook and Derrick Rose. Better player than Brook Lopez, but I think, like, given who was still on the board, the Nets made a great pick at 10. Another scenario was in that Bleacher Report mock draft that I mentioned that had Lopez going to the Sonics at 4. The guy they had falling to 10th to the Nets was Russell Westbrook. So that kind of got flipped. And I don't know. I mean, the Nets, I don't know if they would have taken him in that spot because they had Devin Harris at the time. But I mean, a backcourt of those two together would have been really electric. And another like way that they could have gotten like a great player at that pick, but a different one. And it would have definitely like changed things in the future.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, wow, I'm just trying to, Russell Westbrook thing really has me shook. Because yeah, again, to reach at 4, for which is what a lot of people took and their thought, and that's why you can't predict the draft at all. And I hate to say that it's a crapshoot, because, you know, I love it and spend a lot of time following it, but it really is. You know, Westbrook went at 4, and everyone thought, you know, he's raw, only had 1 year at UCLA, not sure what he's going to, or 2 years at UCLA, not sure what he's going to really be. You know, you have the Wolves and the Grizzlies swapping OJ Mayo for Kevin Love, and look how poorly that worked out for the Grizzlies. Guys like Joe Alexander, who everyone loved coming out of West Virginia, going ahead of Brolo. It's so interesting to see how these things work out.
Yeah, and the Westbrook thing also, like if the Thunder, or then the Sonics, if they had gotten Lopez and say they still get like Harden and whatnot, like I wonder if they even still trade Harden, because like, I think part of their logic for trading him was that like he was a little bit like of the same skill set as Westbrook and Durant, and then they wanted to keep Ibaka as like their big guy. But if they had Lopez there, like maybe they don't trade Harden. Maybe KD eventually stays because like he doesn't have the personality clash with Brook that he would like eventually have with Russell Westbrook. So there's like it's like a whole mess of things that could have been different.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great point, actually, how it would have changed the Sonics/Thunder's future, because you would think that they want to keep that second ball handler in Harden, and he probably ascends a little bit earlier by having more playmaking duties. Then you have him, KD, Rolo, Ibaka, that's a really, really dangerous team. And it's probably, you know, ends up being better than that one season in OKC when, you know, it was kind of Kevin Martin taking the place of Harden after that trade and then some other ancillary depth pieces. But, you know, especially with the Thunder, their weakness was always centered, having Kendrick Perkins there. And you have Brolo, who's certainly kind of above average, cuspy all-star guy. And then maybe you backfill with like Reggie Jackson or go for someone who's a little bit more low usage at the point guard spot that can more just spot up and be a caretaker. So that actually could be really interesting. And then maybe KD doesn't leave for the Warriors. Maybe he doesn't come to the Nets and so on.
Yeah. The Nets wind up with Westbrook instead of Durant somehow.
Wow. Wow. And then Kyrie.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, once you like kind of find a thread with these things, they kind of like spiral off into like just pure chaos.
Yeah. No, I think this one's so interesting because it's like, it could have either, it's definitely a what if. It could have either turned out a lot worse for the Nets or a lot better. No one really knows.
Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, like the guys that I just mentioned, like Brooke Lopez, Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook, like, I mean, obviously, like, Love and Westbrook are going to wind up having had better careers than Lopez, but, like, tough to say that the Nets, like, went wrong taking Brooke. The one guy who Chad Ford mentions that the Nets loved is a guy you mentioned before, Joe Alexander, who I shudder to wonder if somehow he and Brooke were both there, if the Nets had, like, hypothetically passed on Lopez to take Joe Alexander, because he did not work out in the NBA, played a couple years, then went around to, like, Israel and playing in Europe a lot. So they dodged a bullet there. Big shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks for taking him.
Yeah, he was he was low-key a problem at Western, yeah. And I remember he, I think he had some connection where he like spoke maybe, I think he like, yeah, so he's from Taiwan. So he's, so I think they were like, oh, we're going to pair him with Yi Jianlian.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, he's, speaks Mandarin, it says on his Wikipedia that I just pulled up.
Right. Well, yeah, E's going to have a friend. Because remember, E was like pretty pissed when he got drafted to Milwaukee because they didn't have any sort of Asian population. And then they brought Joe Alexander on board, who was a good player in his own right, but then he just like flamed out spectacularly in 2 years in the league. That's really, really rare to see a top 10 pick, you know, basically play under 1,000 career minutes. And this is a guy that averaged 17.6 boards on a West Virginia team that I think made a pretty deep run the year before he was drafted.
Yeah, the like thing about taking a guy in the top 10 to like, because he speaks the same language as the guy that you have on your roster is that, I mean, granted, like he was a good prospect and was expected to go like in a similar range, but that's kind of crazy.
That is probably why that GM, I guess it was John Hammond at the time, doesn't have a job.
Yeah. Should we move on, Josh?
We shall. We shall.
But before we do move on, I want to talk to you guys about Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They've got 16 amazing flavors. 8 of them are a chocolate and nut combination, and 8 are nut-free options if that's the look you're going for. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're surprisingly soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy, and they can help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber goodness. The Raspberry Bar, extremely underrated, definitely in the Rushmore conversation in terms of Built Bar flavors. If you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. I need to do that. That is promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
So another one that I wanted to talk about was another draft one. Flashing back to 1996, the Nets wind up taking Kerry Kittles, 8th overall, a guy that they passed on with that pick. A great run, by the way, in this draft from 13 through 15. It went Kobe, Peja, and then Steve Nash. Jermaine O'Neal picked 17. So a stacked middle of the draft and a pretty stacked top of the draft with AI, Camby, Marbury, Ray Allen, among others. But the Nets wind up with Kerry Kittles. They did want to take Kobe Bryant, though, is the story. Kobe and his agent kind of convinced the team that he wouldn't play in New Jersey and would go to Italy. My question is, like, why not just, like, take him and trade him like Charlotte did? Like, they may not have gotten, like, everything back that you would want for a guy who would wind up being, like, a no-doubt Hall of Famer, five-time champion, all that stuff. But you get something back. And
yeah.
I don't know. Kittles was, like, fine, but I feel like this was kind of a missed opportunity.
I mean, certainly looking back on it, where they were coming from was, like, Kittles was a good player, and he played on a lot of good Nets teams, and I think he would have had, you know, his career was kind of ended prematurely. I think he would have been a lot better had he not had some injuries. Because, I mean, you look at him, second season in the league, scores 17 a game, 42% on three, ability to get to the basket a little bit, fits in with a running team, which was a nice fit once Kidd came on board a couple of years later. And then also for the Nets, you know, he was a guy who was a really, really, really good player at Villanova, just kind of like the best player on those teams, consistently one of the best college players for his 4 years there. And then you bring him on board where it's not necessarily local, but you do have the Philly and New Jersey connection, and at least maybe some overlap there a little bit on Villanova fans who, for some reason, I don't know, maybe scarred by the Sixers of childhood and like the Nets. So I think there was something there, and they probably just liked, frankly, what Kittles would give them better than any kind of potential trade package they could get if they did take Kobe, because Kittles was a good prospect. So definitely missed opportunity there. And I think between that and, you know, the Kyle Korver getting traded for a copier, money for a copier, two stories that I feel like on draft night, Nets fans will never live down. But I feel like it could have been a lot worse. Obviously, it could have been a ton better. But, you know, they could have taken like Samaki Walker or Tony Delk or one of these guys.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of like a scenario where there's like a guy's like, I won't play for this team, but the team just like takes him anyway? I can't really think of any off the top of my head, but I'm curious if they had just taken him anyway, like what would have happened?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, similar to like an Ejian Liang thing is, I can't believe he mentions for E in this podcast, but I think it's so like, I don't know. I feel like the holdout itself is such a more football thing. Like you have, what's his face? Eli Manning being like, I'm not going to play for the Chargers. Right. But I feel like it's just not a thing that happens in basketball.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. Another thing you brought up, you mentioned.
So you just were like, okay, I'd rather play for XYZ and just get my money for sure than really try to optimize my situation.
Right. Yeah, I guess NFL careers are generally shorter, so you kind of like want things to happen quicker, as opposed to like the NBA, you theoretically have more time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to say also, you brought up that Kittles kind of fit well once they brought in Kidd and stuff. I wonder if they still trade for Kidd if they take Kobe, like, because that would be like the two best guards in the league at that time, if so. And I wonder if they even, because they trade Marbury to get Kidd, but they didn't have Marbury at the time of this draft. So I wonder if they even make the trade for Marbury if they have Kobe on the team. And is Kobe part of either of these trades? A lot more questions like from that. But if they could somehow manage to get Kobe and Kidd on the same team in the early 2000s, that would have been really fun.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And it's like when you look at Kobe's career, I'd say he became kind of an all-star player in that 98-99 season, that lockout shortened one. And then you have him becoming, let's say, a superstar in that 2000 and 2001 season. So I think when you look at kind of those two things as landmarks, it's actually really interesting to see where Marbury and also Kidd would have fit in. Because you have Marbury, who gets traded to the Nets in that 98-99 season. They still probably would have done it if they had Kobe, because he was becoming, a good player, but not necessarily someone that, you know, was primed to be an all-time great Hall of Famer. Obviously, the fit's one thing, because I think we could all agree that Kidd would have been a much better fit with Kobe than Marbury, and having a second ball-dominant guy. So I think they still probably would have pulled the trigger for Marbury, because you still need that talent guy. And then soon after, you're going to realize that it's not a great fit from a personnel standpoint. And then by the time Kobe makes the leap to superstardom, it's the season before the Nets would have traded for Kidd. So they actually might still have done it just because you get a better fit in place. You have someone who's more mature in Kidd in his career and definitely has complementary skills and, you know, is a proven winner in the future, not necessarily at that point, and can definitely, with Kobe, really lead the team to championship contention. And I think Marbury was still always trying to prove that he was something more than a good stats, bad team guy.
Yeah, that's a good point about just like the timing of it all. And the fact that they wound up with Kittles and Kidd on the team at the same time kind of means that like whoever they took at that spot, they could have, they had the pieces to make those trades without including the guy picked at that spot. And yeah, I mean, Kobe was an all-star his second season, but he started one game that year, and it was kind of just because he's like on that team and in LA and whatnot. And we saw footage of that in The Last Dance. That was that all-star game where he and MJ overlapped. And it definitely, like, looking at Kobe's stats from that year and like seeing the clip of Jordan, like saying that he just wants to shoot, it is kind of accurate. I mean, he shot like 42%, was like 15 points a game, started once in 79 games. I don't really understand why he made the all-star team. But yeah, so I think if after that season, that's the season that the Marbury trade happens, I think that would probably still happen, like you said. And then the Kidd trade was really just Kidd for Marbury straight up. So there's no reason to think that that wouldn't still be on the table. And yeah, I mean, Kidd and Marbury together in the like early to mid 2000s would have been a problem, as you would say, Josh.
Exactly. I forget who said it. Or it was David Aldridge said Reggie Miller was a problem in the episode 9 of Fans, and I just got so excited because I love when people use it as kind of a colloquialism. But it was nice to see that.
Yeah, Reggie Miller was a problem. We saw it in the 0-2 playoffs against the Nets.
Facts. Marcus, our last one is something that I'd say is probably a bit more under the radar. It is taking you back to the 2015-16 season. So this was, you know, probably a dozen or so games in late 2015. The Nets were facing the Warriors in what would be the Warriors' kind of initial 24-game win streak to start the year. Their 73-9 season, their appearance in the NBA Finals, but their loss to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we all remember really kind of the Warriors were running on fumes for those really at the end of the season. And a lot of it was because they were pushing so hard to get 73-9, which I still think was a good decision in retrospect. And at the start of the year, they were really trying to set the all-time record for most wins to start a season. And there was a time where Brooklyn, I'm just looking at now, game 11. So this is an overtime game. They had a chance to – the Nets were terrible this year. We all remember this is kind of one of the doldrum seasons with my boy Lionel Hollins, who actually got canned that year. The Nets finished with, like, 20 wins. Awful, I think, first year. Sean Marks gets brought in that spring. They hire Kenny. The rest is history from there. But the Nets had a chance to win the game in regulation. And Brook Lopez missed an easy kind of, like, 1 or 2 foot tip-in. That would have been a buzzer beater. It was such an easy shot. He missed it. Game goes to overtime. Golden State wins. You can tell me if I'm being ridiculous on this, Marcus. If Brook Lopez makes that shot, the Warriors' streak to start the season's broken. They end up just kind of, I could say, losing more games throughout the year, not trying as much to break any records, resting their players more. They probably, I think we can say, win the championship against Cleveland. And then if they win the championship against Cleveland, Kevin Durant doesn't come there. Think about how much that alters not only the Nets history, but NBA history. Because is KD going to come to Brooklyn a few years down the line from Oklahoma City? Where would he have been at that point? I think it's all just so fascinating. And if Brook Lopez could have made like a 2 foot shot off an inbounds pass, this all could have changed.
Yeah. When you sent me this, I was like struggling to even like remember this shot because I was not like paying that much attention to like a random Nets Warriors game in like mid-November in 2015. But yeah, like looking back at it, they would have dropped them to 10-1. They probably don't push as hard for 73 and they get more rest. They sit guys out. And the thing about them winning the title, like I don't think that the push for 73 wins is what necessarily like caused them to lose. I mean, they were still up 3-1, and I think if Draymond hadn't been suspended for game 5, they would have just won the series in 5. But the thing with Draymond getting suspended was because it was due to the fact that he had accrued so many flagrant foul points and like technical points like throughout the season. And so if he gets more rest, like I would think that that number would go down. And so him getting a flagrant or a technical or whatever he got in game 4 of that final series wouldn't have pushed him over the edge. And so he wouldn't have been suspended. And that to me is why the Warriors would have won that series. And then in addition to like the fact that KD, I think he does not go there if they win the title, because part of the impetus for him going was Draymond calling him after that series and saying like, we need more, we need you. So he wouldn't have done that if they had won, obviously. So I think KD doesn't go there. It's possible he goes to the Celtics. It's possible he stays in Oklahoma City and does like a 1+1 and goes somewhere else in the summer of 2017, maybe. In that offseason, like Philly had max cap space. I think they wound up using that on JJ Redick. So, I mean, I would definitely take KD over Redick. So maybe KD goes there and is playing with Simmons and Embiid for a couple years. And the other part of this is that, or there's a lot of parts actually, but if KD stays in Oklahoma City, Paul George stays in Indiana or gets sent to the Lakers, because they only traded for him to like fill that KD role. So if Paul George goes to the Lakers, Kawhi wouldn't go to the Clippers by himself. Kawhi maybe goes to the Lakers. LeBron maybe stays in Cleveland because he like had the ability to leave kind of scot-free since he had won them the title. If he hadn't won, it's definitely a lot harder for him to leave. So maybe he stays in Cleveland. If he's staying long-term, does that change Kyrie wanting to go? Like, I know Kyrie didn't really want to be like the last man standing there after LeBron left, kind of like Kevin Love has become these last two seasons. So maybe he's like more interested in staying, or maybe he's trying to go somewhere else. The Rockets, who trade for Chris Paul from the Clippers because they want to like compete with the super team Warriors, like, do they not make that trade in the summer of 2017? So maybe like the Clippers stay together and like the Lakers have the team that like the Clippers have now, and Cleveland is still good. OKC still has like all of their guys. Like, there's so many things that could have changed that can kind of be tied to this one shot, which I never would have thought until you pointed out, Josh.
I think you just laying all that out really, right, how many different possibilities there are.
Yeah. I mean, like, even like the Knicks, like, maybe don't trade Porzingis if KD like signed his contract to be timed to a different summer. Like, maybe they are like not trying to go all in. What was that?
So maybe they don't draft Frank.
Right.
Thinking about how different the world is there.
Yeah, that would have changed everything. But yeah, I mean, like, if like Blake Griffin maybe doesn't get traded to the Pistons if the Clippers are keeping Chris Paul, like Tobias Harris would then still be in Philly. Maybe he comes to the Nets in free agency eventually, as was rumored, instead of kind of staying in Philly. Jimmy Butler, maybe he's in Chicago still. Maybe he's in Minnesota still. Like, maybe he just goes from Minnesota straight to Miami. There's like so many different, like basically every great player has like changed teams in the last couple seasons, outside of a couple guys like Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, like a few random guys here and there who are at the top of the game. But a lot of all-star players have changed teams these last 4 seasons, and it can all be traced back to Kevin Durant joining the Warriors, which might not have happened if they had won the title, which might not have happened, or might have happened if Brooke Lopez made that shot.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think your point also on basically all the guys changing teams in the last few years, the guys that really matter and drive winning in this league, like, that I think in and of itself, like, looking at that and also in parallel watching the Jordan doc and seeing him basically for 15 years through a hiatus in the meantime, all these regime changes, staying there, I think it's like, it's just so interesting to see how that works now. And like, the player empowerment era has just really shifted things so, so drastically. And I think, like, how we reach a tipping point where it needs to kind of go back in the other direction, because I feel like it's almost now kind of getting out of control where the rumor mill just starts years in advance, even if there's no kind of like nothing to warrant it. Okay, who's the next guy who can get traded, whether it's like Giannis or someone else? It's like it's just constantly a feeding frenzy on trying to identify the next guy.
And that's yeah, I mean, for like looking back at that doc and like the fact that they just let MJ go at the end of the 98 season, like because Jerry Krause didn't want to bring back Phil Jackson, like right now or like in the more modern era, like if LeBron doesn't like David Blatt, they just fire him mid-season and still win the title. Like if a guy of MJ's talent level, which would really just be LeBron right now, like went to the Lakers and was like, if Frank Vogel isn't the coach of the Lakers at the start of the next season, like I'm going to retire. Like there's no chance that they would get rid of Frank Vogel, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a completely different league at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is like not the same thing, but it's we love it nonetheless. Marcus, I think that is it for our What If series.
Yeah, it was fun. The last one was like kind of probably my favorite of the ones we did, just because it was like it seemed so random and so innocuous, but it maybe had the most impact out of all the ones we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I agree with that. I do. I think it's like that's like one of the most interesting things and why I want to talk about it, because it's like not something that's ever really discussed, but it did have so many implications. I think really my broad strokes on all the things we discussed is that things could have been a lot better for the Nets over the years, but the spot they're in now, it definitely wasn't easy to get to this point, and with a couple of things here or there, they might not actually have, you know, two Hall of Fame guys in Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and some nice pieces in the war chest. So regardless of what you have to say, I think we can all agree that the last few years, Sean Marks has done an incredible job building up the talent pool. Obviously, they have a lot of decisions to make in the coming years regarding how they want to work on the role players, picking a new coach, of course, and thinking about the future of this team. But I think regardless, the future is certainly bright, and there was no guarantees it was going to be this way.
No, yeah. I mean, like, regardless of how they got here, they're definitely in a great spot now, for sure.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh and I have one more podcast this week. That'll be out tomorrow, just talking about some of the news that has gone down over the last week or so. Spencer Dinwiddie's contract will be discussed. Some Kyrie news, a lot of stuff to get into. So we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be well. Bye.